I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today, Dr. Michael Olmsted, is a biocompatible dentist with an extensive background in all phases of dental and integrative health care. He is also a certified Maharishi Ayurvedic health practitioner, an honors graduate of the University of Southern California School of Dentistry. He has authored many consumer-oriented articles and has been featured on radio and television. He is available for consultation at dentalsecondopinion.com or dentalphoneconsultation.com, or may be contacted at 877-335-3069. He will talk about root canals, fluoride, mercury filling removal, and other interesting aspects of dental health. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Olmsted, and I look forward to hearing about biocompatible dentistry. Now first, you are a biocompatible dentist, an Ayurvedic physician.
Yes.
And how do you see these connected?
Well, increasingly, and I was just speaking with a colleague of mine about dental health and how it affects overall health. Dental health impacts overall health, so there's a big connection between the health of our body and the health of our mouths. We never used to think this in the profession. And Ayurveda, which is a mouthful of a word to say, is the oldest healthcare system in the world. And the connection between the two is that increasingly we're focusing in health, as I think you know, on the biome. We have a biome on our skin. We have a biome in our gut, which gets most of the press. We have an oral biome, which is increasingly becoming significant. And what we're finding is the oral biome and the gut biome intercommunicate, the bacteria intercommunicate. Now, they can do so in a good fashion or in a not good fashion. And so there's a connection there. And another connection is that digestion is one of the, if not perhaps the most key factor in Ayurveda. And this relates very much to the gut biome and leaky gut syndrome and how that impacts our general immune system and all kinds of things. It's pretty well established at this point in time that of the 10 trillion cells in our body, and bacteria are singled cell organisms, of the 10 trillion cells that we walk around with, well over 90% of them are bacteria. So we're only 10% us and 90% other things. And so therefore, I think we need to be very mindful of the health of our mouth and how it affects or infects our body.
Great. And what services do you provide to your patients?
I don't conduct clinical dentistry treatments any longer. Well, some, to some extent, with family members. But my background is so broad that when I was practicing, I found people calling me because I had radio shows and articles that I had written from other places in the world. And they said, can you help me? You know, I would say, sure, send me your x-rays, send me your questions, photographs, things of that nature. And I will evaluate this and we'll do this remotely, sort of like an internet or an online approach. And so that evolved over time as I started to segue out of the clinical treatment. And now that's exclusively what I do. People will contact me with health questions and dental questions, and I will do a consultation. First, we gather data. They send me their health records, their dental records, which are all digital these days, and their questions, and I do an evaluation, diagnostic workup and then treatment plan options and share those with them. And in the case of a couple of clients that I have currently in process, I will actually interface with dentists that I'm referring them to that I know all over the United States who can perform the unique kinds of treatment that they require.
Could you give us a couple case studies of people that you saw and what happened and how you disposed of them or the disposition?
Well, maybe we start at the beginning, do the most current cases. I have a lady who was referred to me by an article that I just published in the Price-Pottinger Nutrition Foundation Journal. And it was much more ambitious of an undertaking than I anticipated, as articles like that usually are. I ended up with almost 50-some references and so forth and so on in many pages. And they have a little section at the bottom of the article that says about the author. Well, long story short, she called me a few days ago, and she's having difficulty with her gum tissue health and digestion. She's had a history of esophageal cancer, and she was very, very bright and very sharp and very vibrant lady, but she needs to know why she's experiencing suddenly some oral bone loss, gum recession, and some periodontal issues. So we're going to do a workup on her. I requested films from the dentist be sent to me digitally, and having her have some photographs taken and a panographic film. And what I think will happen with this case is that I will diagnose it and give her treatment options, and then I'll connect her with practitioners who can help her in her area, which would be South Orange County. Another lady in New York contacted me, needing, and she's a bit of a celebrity. I can't say her name or how she is a celebrity, but she had gone to a dentist and been quoted $93,000 for her dental care, which is, you know, a reasonable chunk of finance. And I did a workup. She sent me all of her records, photographs of models of her mouth, photographs of her mouth, and all the records that I requested, which the dentist was happy to send. And I worked it all up and then interfaced with the dentist that had originally done the treatment plan, and we ended up providing her with more dentistry than she had originally been diagnosed for, and saved her just nearly $30,000 for the case, which surprised even me. But I spent quite a lot of time talking with the dentist, who was a specialist, a prosthodontist, and so that was a very favorable outcome. Ayurvedically, I've had patients that have multiple challenges, many times hormonal imbalances, heart issues, blood pressure issues, digestive issues, diabetes, and we do a workup on them that's quite thorough health questionnaire, all of which is kept very confidential and secure in the internet system. And then I make recommendations for them, and they implement those recommendations, and then I offer them two complimentary follow-up sessions as part of that. And that's been incredibly successful. People have had incredible results, weight loss, some rather remarkable results, very uplifting things.
Great, good. Then we hear a lot about the effects of gum disease on our overall health. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Well, this is something as a topic that's been rising to the surface of dental research in the last, well, I would say 25 years. Initial research was done with Veterans Administration in the United States, and then it was duplicated with a large group in Europe and England. And it all revolved around what has been called the focal theory of disease. And so maybe taking a step backward here on the focal theory of disease, that theory sort of dictated that you have an infection somewhere in the body. Could be your big toe, could be a tooth. In this case, we'll say it's a dental infection. And that would have an effect elsewhere in the body. So that focus of infection spread and impacted our health elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very popular in the 1920s and 30s. But in the 50s, some research came out that was quite faulted. And for about 30 years until the 1980s, the focal theory of disease was just denigrated and denied and quite beat up by clinicians. And then in the 1990s, late 1980s, early 1990s, that all changed. We sort of went back full circle.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that the bacteria in the mouth, and it started with periodontal conditions. Peri means around, dontal means teeth. So the tissues that support the teeth in the mouth, the bone, the gum tissue. And studies were done that were remarkable, and any one of which, and I'll mention half a dozen here in a moment, any one of which we could speak about for hours that were startling, just absolutely startling. And one of the first things I guess we would say is statistically, 80% of adults and nearly 50% or more of children have some form of gum disease. It's clearly the most prevalent disease process that Americans and probably people in the rest of the world are exposed to. The studies that I was mentioning previously, they're just startling. For example, if a person has just mild gum disease, mild to moderate, your gums bleed a little bit, and they're pregnant, they have a 700% greater chance of a preterm abnormal birth weight child.
Hmm.
Now, depending on the study you come across, it could be upwards of 30%, between 17 and 30% of pregnancy outcomes, your APOs, abnormal pregnancy outcomes, and abnormal birth weight or preterm birth is probably the most common thing. So this is a pretty incredible connection. You have a 20% increased risk of stroke if you have gum disease. You have a 600% increase of cognitive decline with Alzheimer's if you have periodontal disease. You have a 14% greater risk of breast cancer if you're a postmenopausal woman if you have gum disease. 50% greater risk of diabetes. Gastric and duodenal ulcers are bacterially caused. We recognize that now. And the bacteria that causes it is the reservoir for that is in the mouth. We've located oral disease-causing bacteria in the arterial plaque, in the placenta. We've noted those in tumors. In breast cancer, we've seen periodontal bacteria present. And if that wasn't enough, I'll finish off with the percentage increase of certain cancers that you will have if you have gum disease.
Mm-hmm.
You have a 14 to 21% greater risk of overall contracting cancer, 35% for leukemias, increase of 36% in lung cancers, 49% kidney, 54% pancreatic, and then colorectal and esophageal cancers are increased dramatically as well if you have gum disease. So that's sort of what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
With the connection between overall health and dental health.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's unbelievable. I had no idea that there was such a close connection between gum disease and cancer and the other illnesses. So that's... But statistics will, you know, show you how dangerous that is. So what can people do then as far as the gum disease? Now, I know I've had the gums retracted. Are there other procedures that are done that will reduce the bacteria and all in the mouth and improve the condition of the gums?
Yes. I mean, there's that statement that we've heard since you and I grew up, not that we want to date ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and it's still a very popular statement, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
prevention is still the foundational approach that we would have to anything of a dental nature, whether it's tooth decay or gum disease or anything, diet. Probably the most important thing is to remove the biofilm, because we have biofilm in the mouth, just like we get biofilm in water pipes
mm-hmm.
and biofilm
mm-hmm.
this and biofilm on that. And the biofilm is also called dental plaque.
Mm-hmm.
And that plaque is a mucopolysaccharide or carbohydrate substance that's mixed with a lot of bacteria, billions of them, and it sticks to the surface of the teeth, down below the gum tissue as well. So to the extent that we can keep that removed and have a fairly good diet that enhances our immune system and doesn't take away from it, certain nutrients, folic acid, bioflavonoids, ascorbic acid or vitamin C, some B vitamins, zinc, calcium, magnesium are very key in having a nutritionally beneficial effect. But home care is really, really our most important issue, because keeping that plaque off on an hourly and daily basis is essential. If you have the soft material removed, then you don't develop as much calcified deposits, which are just like little apartment complexes for bacteria to stay next to the gum tissue. The gum responds by becoming inflamed. The bone responds when it settles into that by dissolving away. So if we establish a good home care program with the proper dental products, the proper dental devices, and we know how to use them, that's the first step. And then regular professional care and good diet. Those are the three most important things. There are other factors, but those are the three most important things.
Mm-hmm. Now, I watch my diet very carefully. I'm vegan, but I do go off a couple days a week, and usually it's to have some eggs and cheese because I miss the cheese a lot. And I'm very careful about that and the water I drink. I don't drink tea or I don't drink coffee. I don't smoke. I don't do any of the things that would cause the plaque. But when I go, I have a lot of plaque, and they tell me they think it's because of the Listerine that I use. I've had the gums retracted, and I'm supposed to go two or three times a day with the pick and go through each tooth and with the Listerine, and they say that they think it's the Listerine that causes all the plaque on my teeth.
Well, Listerine is an interesting product. It's a convention, what we would call a conventional dental product,
mm-hmm.
in that it, you know, from a conventional company, that it's not alternative or natural,
mm-hmm.
but it does contain essential oils, thymol and eucalyptus and some other essential oils. And as long as you're using the one that's not alcohol-based, you're probably going to be okay using it. The only thing that I can see that might be contributing would be each person's metabolism is different, and metabolically some people will develop more plaque than others. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean that something's
mm-hmm.
right or wrong. It just means that that particular individual, and those individuals are actually in the majority in our society, at least it's my clinical experience, have to be a little bit more vigilant. I'm one of those sort of small percentage of people that I could not brush my teeth for 3 or 4 days and have very little plaque on them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very little.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't do that. I do a real good regimen, you know, 2-3 times a day, and I'm very meticulous about how I do it, as you would expect. But it's a lot to do with metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
It has something to do as well with the kinds of food. If we eat softer, more carbohydrate-based, starch-based foods, we're going to probably develop more plaque than a person who has fruits and vegetables, fruits that have a low sugar content and protein and good quality fat. Those things won't tend to produce as much plaque. Carbohydrate-based things, even if they're whole grains, will produce more plaque in our mouths, and then that eventually relates to the development of more calculus if we don't get it completely removed.
Are there effective substitutes for Listerine?
You can actually make your own mouthwash if you're inclined, where you mix like peppermint oil, try to have all organic substances with filtered or distilled water so that it has a good shelf life, and put it in a bottle and add a little bit of tea tree oil and maybe some Melaleuca alternifolia, that would be tea tree oil, and then you can add some other essential oils if you like. And each time you use it, you just have to shake it up because the oil will tend to float on top of the water. If you do that and then rinse with that, that's going to be bactericidal, meaning that it will kill the microorganisms. But it's interesting because it's selective. It doesn't kill the good ones. And so you can make your own, and as they say in England, it's cheap as chips. It doesn't cost much to do that. You can make it fresh. You have to be careful not to contaminate the bottle, so you want to take portions out rather than just taking a drink out of the bottle. That's one thing that can be done as an alternative, or you can buy commercially prepared products that are in the natural food section of the health food store, the cosmetic section. But they won't have, you won't have as much control over dosage levels. And so you can add amounts of these essential oils, the bactericidal things. You can add a little bit of baking soda. That will create a neutral pH. You can add grapefruit seed extract in very modest amounts, and it'll be very effective to control the microorganisms in the mouth. So that would probably be the first suggestion I would make for those listeners who want to be a little inventive and have some fun, and they can use spearmint, peppermint, or any essential oil that has a pleasant flavor and taste for them.
Great. I know the tea tree oil. That's great, especially for fungus. Then the fluoride. Is that still a health concern?
Oh, it's, you know, unfortunately, yes, it is. It never ceased to be a health concern. And our exposure to it, we were able to somewhat control that. You know, we could control our exposure to fluoride until we started to fluoridate our water. And then we had little control unless we had bottled water. In areas where fluoride is, and again, some studies and some statistics to indicate the significance of fluoride. Fluoride, of course, is a byproduct of aluminum manufacturing and mining. Originally, it was used as a rat poison and still is. It's on the periodic table of chemicals and elements that you probably were exposed to, and all of us were when we were juniors in high school. There are the halogens, the halogen chemicals, chlorine, fluorine, bromine, and iodine. Of those, and of all the chemicals on the periodic table, of which there's, I don't know, 120 some odd these days, fluorine is probably one of the most chemically reactive substances known to man. It's incredibly reactive. What that means is when it gets in the body, it reacts to things. It forms bonds with things. It doesn't just pass through, you know, like a guest that just stays overnight. It tends to retain in the body. And unfortunately, it retains in certain tissues. Chief among them would be bone, osseous tissue. And it retains, meaning that it builds up in its level over time. And a study done by the New Jersey Department of Health years ago showed an increased incidence of osteosarcoma, bone cancer, in young boys that were exposed to fluoridated water. does it work on tooth decay? I'll jump around here a little bit and get back to the studies because they can be a little bit dry. Does it work on tooth decay? Well, the answer is no. Emphatically, it doesn't. And that's why many European countries, Japan, and some other countries have banned or discontinued the use of it in their water supplies as an adjunct. What happens with fluoride is that if you look at one of the best studies was New Zealand. The South Island of New Zealand isn't fluoridated. The North Island is. Now, you would expect the North Island with a greater population density would have less tooth decay because they have fluoridated water. Actually, they have higher tooth decay than the children and a rate of tooth decay than on the South Island of New Zealand. So it's not what it's painted to be in history. Historically, we've had some rather tragic uses of fluoride. During World War II, the Germans used it in their concentration camps and prisons to keep the prisoners sedated. They put it in the water supply. And Stalin, during his reign in Russia, used it in the gulags in his prison camps to do this for the same purpose. This is all matter of historical record. So we have an increased risk of osteoporosis if you have fluoridated water for just a few years during your life. It can cause tendinous inflammations. It's very prevalently used in antibiotics, the levoquinones, the fluoroquinones. It's used in antidepressants. It's used in a lot of conventional pharmaceutical drugs at very, very high levels. And so it becomes quite worrisome when we think of our cumulative exposure. For example, in toothpaste, conventional toothpaste that's fluoridated will contain up to 1,000 parts per million. Some toothpastes will have up to 5,000 parts per million if they're a prescription item. At 1,000 to 1,500 parts per million, the optimal level that's stated for water prevention of tooth decay is 1 part per million. At 1,500 parts per million, study was done in just regular fluoridated toothpaste you can buy at the supermarket or the drugstore. A study was done showing that children that are five, six years of age up to that level, that age, will swallow about 60% of the toothpaste that they use, either because they like the taste of it, they don't rinse their mouths out sufficiently. So they have a huge buildup of fluoride at a very early age from just a toothpaste exposure. And if you look at the label on those toothpaste tubes, it says if you swallow more than, if the child swallows more than a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, you want to call a poison control specialist, something to that effect on the label or the box. Now, that's pretty scary stuff that is overlooked by the public, all of these things. It can cause ADHD or aggravate it, and it's a potent, very potent endocrine disruptor. So our endocrine system, thyroid, adrenal hormones, sexual hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, all of our neurotransmitters, these endocrine hormones are very much disrupted by fluoride. So that's sort of the not good news about fluoride. And I would encourage all of the listeners to look for alternatives and don't feel that you have to use fluoride or you're going to have rampant tooth decay, because the studies just don't support that.
It's very difficult to find a toothpaste without fluoride. I use Tom's, but I think that they used to have more, and they have decreased. I think they only have maybe two now that do not have fluoride. And some of the other companies that are fluoride-free have other chemicals that are probably worse, you know. And sometimes they take the fluoride out, but they replace it with other chemicals that are worse than the fluoride. So it's difficult, unless you do your own, to find commercial fluoride-free toothpaste.
you have to really become a label reader. There's mm-hmm. no question about that. Mm-hmm. If you don't read the labels carefully, then you will fall prey to some of these things that you talk about. Triclosan, which is present in toothpaste, one particular brand that's a commercial product, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. a health food product.
Mm-hmm.
Triclosan has been banned by the FDA for use in hand soaps unless it's used as a disinfectant in a medical or dental environment, because it's a disruptor of hormonal systems, and it's hepatotoxic, meaning liver toxic, and it's absorbed through the skin with these soaps that we use, and they're putting it in baby toys because babies put toys in their mouths that have been on the ground, and then sponges, and gosh, it just ends up everywhere. And so we have to be quite careful with being a label reader when it comes to our dental products. And there's one very important reason why, and that is that the mouth is a very vascular tissue.
Mm-hmm.
We use nitroglycerin sublingually under the tongue to get that drug into the bloodstream very quickly as a coronary vessel vasodilator if we're having angina, heart pain.
Mm-hmm.
So with that vascular network, that blood vessel network being very close to the surface in the mouth, it doesn't take much to have it absorb things that we shouldn't be absorbing and exposing ourselves to, and hence we end up with a lot of that in the bloodstream, and it gets deposited in the body. And these chronic, long-term, many-year exposures to some of these things can produce health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of the health problems that we're beset with, some of these chemicals are contributing, and probably dental exposure from these chemicals is not helpful.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of baking soda for toothpaste?
I think baking soda has one very big value and one not-so-good value.
Mm-hmm.
The not-so-good value is that it's quite abrasive, and we have to be careful because we can wear the enamel away.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done studies with the number of microns of enamel that are worn away with abrasive dentifrices and
mm-hmm.
with these sport drinks that are very acidic. The good news is that baking soda, if used in very small amounts, causes a basic reaction, which helps to neutralize the acids, which can cause gum disease, inflammation, and tooth decay.
Mm-hmm.
So the bacteria produce these acids, and baking soda neutralizes them. And the more neutral to basic, just shy of the midline of 7, anywhere between 6.8, maybe 7.2 of our saliva, the better our dental health will be, and in fact, probably our overall health as well. So baking soda serves a value in that regard. There's some data to show that if we can make cancer tumor cells basic, they will not flourish, that they will die. And some therapies now, alternative, are utilizing that to some degree of success.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Then can you tell us about the health risk of root canals?
Well, that's a very interesting subject. I'll try to make it brief so we don't spend too much time. But essentially what happens with a root canal is you have a tooth, and the root and the tooth are hollow inside. Inside that hollow chamber is a nerve and some blood vessels and some connective tissue. If for some reason that nerve dies, all of the innervation to that tooth is gone. So you could have a tooth that has a dead nerve, no nerve, and it could look perfectly healthy on the surface. You could drill on that tooth with a drill or put ice on it or hot or a little electrical stimulus, and the person wouldn't even feel it, because there's no nervous reception,
mm-hmm.
Detection. Unfortunately, or fortunately, the little, very small nerve endings that branch out from the main nerve trunk, they're called dentinal tubules. And in any individual tooth, we're going to have millions, perhaps billions of those. For example, these dentinal tubules are submicroscopic. You can only see them really with an electron microscope. If you have a molar tooth and we lay all these dentinal tubules that go out in a three-dimensional fashion, 360 degrees around the root and the crown of the tooth, if you lay all these dentinal tubules now that used to contain a live cell that don't any longer, and you laid them next to one another, head to tail, they would stretch well over a mile.
Hmm.
So that means there are hollow chambers inside the tooth that can harbor microorganisms that can't be debrided, can't be triaged, can't be filled, and bacteria can set up housekeeping in there and produce toxins that the body will respond to by producing immune globulins. And these will have an effect on our immune system. These microorganisms can migrate to other areas of the body. They've been found in breast tumors. And Weston Price of the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation was a dentist. He was an endodontist, a root canal specialist. And he did research in the 1930s, if you can believe this, on the basis of the same knowledge that I'm giving you right now, and found that if he took a tooth that had a dead nerve out and he put that under the skin of a rabbit, the rabbit would get these crippling arthritic conditions and become very unhealthy. Once he took the tooth out, just below the surface of the skin, the rabbit would become healthy. He took that tooth and he put it in an autoclave, which is a way to sterilize things. They use them in hospitals and dental offices. And thinking that, well, gee, I'll sterilize the tooth and I'll see if that somehow has an effect. He put the tooth under the skin of the rabbit. The rabbit got sick again. He took it out. It got well again. The point being that you cannot disinfect these dental tubules. It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So they harbor these microorganisms and create health issues remotely from the location of the tooth. They inhibit an anti-cancer protein, P53, that's one of the most significant anti-cancer things that we have in the body, and root canal research shows that there's some inhibition of the P53, which is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it would maybe lead us more towards being predisposed towards developing cancers. So, yes, root canals have issues.
Mm-hmm. If you have a root canal and then later you have that removed, what do you use to fill in the space?
Well, you've got three options. A removable device that you as a patient can take in and out.
Mm-hmm.
A fixed device that would be attached to the teeth on either side of the space that's created by the tooth being lost.
Mm-hmm.
That's called a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
They can be bonded or cemented. Or you could have an implant where you have a sort of an alternative alternative tooth root placed in the bone that you can anchor now a chewing surface to. Those implants can be made out of titanium. They can be made out of zirconia, which is technically a metal, but it doesn't look like a metal. It looks like a crystal,
mm-hmm.
white crystal. Or you can have them implants made out of a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
They can be a combination of zirconia and titanium. They tend to be fairly well received by the body. For those patients who are concerned about having any metal in their body, I'll recommend zirconia. The outcome seems to be quite favorable, and they are probably the choice for many, many people, an increasing number of people, because of their durability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would you tell us about fillings, and especially those that contain mercury?
Well, we'll close on that. It's many years ago, I would tell my patients, I said, you know, as soon as you're born, it's a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Because we start doing things to the body, don't we? We have, in terms of the mouth, we have a cavity. We have to drill that cavity out or take it out with a laser or any number of other devices and put something in to fill the hole where the bacteria have eroded the tooth structure away. It's a compromise. what do we put in there? Well, we put gold in. Well, some people don't want metal, and there's some electromagnetic issues with that. So we put porcelain in. Well, maybe we don't like the formulation of the porcelain and the fact that a little of that wears away, or we use white filling materials. Maybe we're not happy with that chemistry. But there are certain filling materials that far exceed in the negative aspect of impact, and probably the one that's most commonly used still today are silver amalgam fillings. We've always grown up calling them silver fillings because they look silvery, but the reality is they're only 30% silver and they're 50% mercury. And that's quite startling, and conventional dentistry would have you believe that that mercury is locked in the filling. That's completely false. The mercury is not locked in the filling. Hot foods and beverages and the friction of chewing releases that mercury. It has a vapor pressure, and the mercury comes off as a vapor and it deposits in various areas of the body. It has a half-life of anywhere between 15 and 35 years, which means how long it takes for half of the toxic substance to normally just be detoxified by the body if you have no further exposure. So it's very accumulative in the body and builds up. One average size amalgam filling contains about 750 milligrams of mercury. To give you a perspective, most of the people that we see will have many more than one mercury amalgam filling. That will exceed the Environmental Protection Agency's maximum human adult exposure for over 100 years if you have one filling. Now, all that filling material and mercury isn't lost at once, but it does get lost over time, and it does accumulate and has very destructive influences on neurological tissue, neuromuscular diseases, chronic fatigue. It's been associated with amyloid production in degenerative mental conditions, Alzheimer's, things like that. It leads to depression, lowers our immune response, and predisposes us to gum disease. So not such a good thing. We have alternatives. Most common would be white fillings or composite fillings. They have a variety of different formulations. I favor ones that don't contain any aluminum. And if they're used properly, even though they have some degree of compromise associated with them, they're probably our most favorable alternative. We can use laboratory-processed porcelains, which are even more inert and lose less from the surface, and they're also very good. You can use very high gold content restorations that don't have a lot of alloy with them, and some people feel that those are inert enough to be biocompatible as well. Sealants, dental sealants that are used on children have a liquid in them, bisphenol A, which all of our drink bottles now are becoming aware companies are not putting any BPA, bisphenol A, in there. It's a hormone disruptor. It is an estrogenic compound, and so dental sealants have to be used in a certain fashion with not conventional sealant material, and if they're done with filling material in a certain way, you can eliminate a good number of cavities in children in a very conservative fashion, but not using conventional dental sealant products. So that's a little bit of a quick overview, very quick, of dental materials.
Now, do you recommend that all people have the silver fillings removed or just when they have symptoms?
My feeling on it is that, first of all, a person, we need to look at a person's health, which is typically not done in dentistry except to see if there's going to be any conflict with any medications that we're going to use. We don't look at a person's health. My answer is that if a person has multiple amalgam fillings, it's probably best to consider removal, but only removal with a certain protocol. And that protocol should be followed with rubber dam and safety protocols so that that mercury amalgam isn't ingested when it's removed. Otherwise, we run some pretty significant risks of jumping from the frying pan, as they say, into the fire.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. So is there anything else then you want to add before we look at services, products, books, and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, I think that my summary to everyone would be, and I hope everyone takes this very much to heart, that people need more comprehensive knowledge about their particular dental health issues and dental health status before they begin care, so they can act in an informed fashion. And knowledge is what's needed as the first step. People need knowledge. If they go to a dentist, they have to trust that dentist is going to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Time for us to take control of our health. And we're going to care more about ourselves than our doctors and dentists are. Even if the doctors and dentists are really wonderful people, I'm not saying they're not good people with not good intentions. Mm-hmm. Good knowledge, but we need to have more knowledge in this area, dental area especially.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would encourage people to use the resources that they have. I certainly have put myself up as a resource, and I would encourage people to learn more about dental health.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then will you tell us about services, any products or books that you want to discuss, and how the listeners can reach you?
Yes. I offer consultation services, as I said at the beginning, and the easiest way would be for them to go to the website. I have two different domain names or web addresses, which I will give out, and then a toll-free number. One is www.dentalsecondopinion.com. www.dentalsecondopinion.com.
Is that the number 2 with an ND, or is that spelled out?
It's just spelled out, Dental Second Opinion.
Oh, okay.
Or dentalphoneconsult.com. Or they can just type in drolmstead.com, drolmstead.com, and any one of those three will take them to my website. And it has some valuable information. It has some Ayurvedic information, health information, dental articles that I've written, some hot tips that people can use to help them improve their dental health. And then it also explains how they would be able to make an appointment for a consultation.
Mm-hmm.
The phone number would be 877-335-3069. I'll repeat that, 877-335-3069. And the website will have that phone number. It will have email addresses. Most people just call me because it's quick and easy, and then I can return the call if I don't pick up within just a matter of minutes, and we can discuss their questions and issues.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you're in Alaska. When will you be back in Canada?
Well, I won't be back in Canada, but I will be back in the United States probably in about a month, but I'm seeing clients right now because I do things with telecommunications, internet, Skype, other conference calling facilities, and my cell phone, and we have quite good coverage here. So I'm taking care of my clients even though I'm away working in the wilds of Alaska. I still spend some time each day with my clients.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Good. And if you'll give us the website again, then?
It's drolmstead.com, just D-R, Olmsted, like you'd write Dr. DrOlmsted.com, OlmsTead, or they can type in DentalSecondOpinion.com, write those words, DentalSecondOpinion.com, or DentalPhoneConsult.com.
Great.
Any of those will get you to the website, and mm-hmm. I'll give the phone number one more time just so people will have it, 877-335-3069.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much. It's been very informative and very helpful, and I know we'll give people something to think about as far as their dental health, because I think sometimes it gets put on the back burner. And well, I think sometimes people think they don't have the money for that because it's not always covered with their insurance. Mine is, but a lot of people, I don't think, have dental insurance. So I think that this will let them realize that it is very important that they look after their dental health too, because if they don't, they're going to have physical health problems. So I appreciate this very much, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been my great pleasure, and I hope that the information that we've given will be helpful for all the listeners.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, facebook.com/Carl Helvey, on my Holistic Health Show page at facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, H-O-L-I-S-T-H-E-A-L-T-H, SHO. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.